Hi, everybody. Welcome to the second episode of Did You Hear What Chocolate Said? I am your host, Sharon Mullen, the chocolate writer. Welcome, welcome, welcome. So glad to have you with me today. As we listen to the musical rendition of Let's Groove Tonight by the Elements Earth, Wind, and Fire, just want to say I do not own the rights to this music. It's just purely for intro purposes, not to profit or anything. Just want to talk a little bit today about the recent verses with Earth, Wind, and Fire and the great Isley Brothers. DJ'd with DJ D Nice, the incredible, amazing D Nice, and hosted by none other than Steve Harvey. I don't know, I just have some trepidation about the things I'm seeing out here. And it all has to do with Steve. It's not even about the music. That's where the focus should have remained. But nope, it was the music. So let's talk about it today. Let's talk about it. So the Verses, if you don't know, is a musical contest of sorts, where you have two artists, and they pick 20 songs for each artist, and it's like you play one song against the other one at a time, and then I guess we as an artist is supposed to pick between those two songs in a battle which song wins. What I learned about watching Verses is that it's not about how they perform the song now on the Verses show, it's just about the song itself. For instance, if they did a Verses with, let's say, Cameo versus Confunction, and you had Candy versus Change Me by Confunction, and which song would win? Well, for those of you who are too young to know who Confunction and Cameo are, I'm sorry, but this is the quickest and easiest example I could think of. So those of you who do know those songs, you can hit me up in the comments or send me a message and tell me which song you would have with that Verses. But that's how the Verses is set up. So when the announcement came out that it was going to be an Earth, Wind, and Fire versus the Isley Brothers Verses, everybody was really excited because you're talking two legendary bands. Earth, Wind, and Fire, the Elements of the Universe. You got Maurice White and Philip Bailey and Verdeen White on that bass and all that animation that he does when you see a live show. I mean, hundreds of songs. You couldn't even really count them all. It's just amazing. Then you've got the legendary Isley Brothers that go way back to the 50s and 60s, and I mean, you can't ask for two bands with a better catalog of music to compare, and they're both near and dear to my heart. I have to say in full disclosure that Earth, Wind, and Fire, though, is my favorite band or group of all time. Earth, Wind, and Fire, yes. But anyway, by the time that this was announced, truly, I have to be honest and say, I had decided that I wasn't going to even watch. Even though I love these bands, the idea of Verses for me at this point was, it had played out. I'll just put it like that. It had played out to me. I think what started it was when they did a Verses with Patti LaBelle and Gladys Knight. And I believe the way that the public treated Patti after the verse, well, actually the way that they treated Gladys before the Verses, they were panning Gladys saying, how in the world could you even put Gladys up against Patti LaBelle? She's going to blow her away and all this stuff. And I'm thinking, this is the legendary Gladys Knight, the only artist that according to, according to some, the only artist that they've known to be on pitch every time they hear her sing live or any place else, She's always on pitch. This is Gladys Knight from Gladys Knight and the Pips that goes back all the way to the, I think, 60s or 50s as well. And the woman can blow and has range and everything. And she's classic. She's no joke. But then after the verses, then they were Pan and Patty. I'm just like, what? You're talking about two legendary people here. Who cares who wins? Should they really be winning? Is it really about the music? It was about the music for me. And so after that, I just decided I didn't really like the format. I didn't like the things that people were saying about the artists. It just no longer became about the music, it seemed, and more about a battle and who's on what team and whose team won and all that. It kind of cheapened it for me. So I lost interest and I got over it. So my plan was not to even watch this Versus, as much as I do love the both of the bands. But what I started seeing, even before it took place yesterday, is a whole lot of hatred for the host. It wasn't even about the music. It's Steve Harvey. Steve Harvey hosting? Oh, I'm not watching. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you mean to tell me you love Earth, Wind, and Fire and the Isley Brothers as much as I do, but because he's hosting, you're gonna go ahead and risk missing it just because you can't stand him? And then I began to question, why do you hate Steve Harvey so much? It's like have I been asleep for the past 10 years? What's going on that so many black people that I hear hate Steve Harvey? I just didn't understand it. So I just started looking up stuff, looking up articles, trying to figure out what's going on. So I came up with a list of reasons that I found that people hate Steve Harvey. Okay? So what I'm finding is, one, all the way back to 2003. I never even heard this controversy, so this was new to me. But supposedly, back in 2003, when they were filming the movie Ocean's 11, supposedly Steve Harvey's agent contacted the movie producers and asked them if they would consider Steve Harvey for the role that Bernie Mac ended up playing in that movie. Yes, Steve Harvey's agent supposedly called asking them to consider Steve Harvey rather than Bernie Mac for the movie role in 2003. And I'm thinking to myself, what's wrong? Why are you hating on Steve for this? This is the agent that did this. If this is true, it would have been the agent that did it. It was the agent's call to make, and the agent was just trying to do what's best for his client. How can you get mad at Steve Harvey for that? When the story came out, Steve denied it. Steve was like, no, my agent didn't do that. That's not what happened at all. Bernie Mac came out and said, what you want me to say? I don't, whatever. But the two other kings of comedy came later, Cedric and DL, said that this particular controversy did cause beef between Steve and Bernie Mac. Causing beef doesn't mean it was true. It could have been that Bernie Mac believed it to be true, and Steve could have been saying all along, look, Mac, I didn't do that. It's not true. I didn't do it. My agent didn't do it. Whoever, nobody was trying to sell you out for money. But we will never know, because Bernie Mac now has passed away, of course. Rest in peace, Bernie Mac. And I guess if you like Steve, you believe him. And if you don't, then you don't believe him. I don't know. But to me, that's not a good reason to just hate the man after everything that this man has done in his life and career. And on behalf of black people, you gonna cast him aside for that? Okay, well, let's keep going. So Steve Harvey has been married 3 times. This is his 3rd marriage. The first 2 didn't work out. He finally came public about those 2 prior marriages later on, but they didn't end well. And one of his prior wives, Mary Lee Harvey,
came out and said, you know, some disparageable things about Steve, like that he turned his son against her, that he kicked her out of the house and manipulated the courts and so forth. When they went to court, he came out and said, you know, my business, my empire, whatever, I built it by myself and she was hurt and blah, blah, blah. Well, it was a bad breakup. Anytime you have a couple that's embroiled in a bad breakup, you're going to get stories from both sides. You get his side, you get her side, and somewhere in the middle falls the truth. So since neither one of us participated in their marriage, who are we to know who's telling the truth here? How are we supposed to know this? So you can either believe her and say he was a bum, or you can believe him and say that wasn't true. She was just disgruntled. Both could be true. And I just find it hard to believe that people would also hold that against Steve Harvey now in 2021, but they could be. All right, well, let's move on to something else. His arrogance. Supposedly, Steve Harvey is seen as being so arrogant. Okay. I know a lot of people, a lot of stars, TV stars, movie stars, sports stars, media stars who are arrogant. And their arrogance shows through. I still like them for what they do, but they're just arrogant people. But now with Steve Harvey, it's like arrogance is something new that he created. That you got to hold it against Steve for being arrogant. Everybody over there can be arrogant, but Steve can't be arrogant. And one of the examples I found about his arrogance was something that was said between him and Pusha T. Yes, Pusha T. Pusha T, the rap artist and producer and, rapper. He made a comment, you know, he had beef with Drake, the other rapper and entertainer and producer. And in one of his comments, either a rap lyric or a comment, he said, stop dragging your father around, your daddy around, wearing those Steve Harvey suits, Steve Harvey suits. So that's a diss. That's a sign of disrespect there when you say dragging your daddy around in them Steve Harvey suits. What you're saying is old man suits. And for a young guy like Pusha T and Drake, and you're talking to an audience of primary younger people, that is a put down. That is a negative statement. Pusha T made a negative statement in reference to Steve Harvey about Pusha T and his dad. That's how it started. But Steve Harvey comes back and says, who the F is Pusha T? Who's his broke ass? See, he probably literally did not know who Pusha T is. So, of course, he's going to say broke because he don't know who he is. Never heard of him. Didn't know. So, you call him a broke ass. Now, I don't know about you, but where I'm from, when you call somebody broke ass, it's not really in reference to their financial status. Broke ass just means you're a bum, whatever that means. It doesn't mean that you're literally broke and you don't have money. So the response to that that I've seen in a couple of research items that I saw that brought up this Pusha T issue is, oh, well, he's really worth about $10-15 million and he's this and he's successful and blah, blah, blah. So he's not broke. And so Steve called him broke and he's not broke. That's kind of arrogant. No, that's not resting well with me. If you don't like Steve Harvey already, then yes, you'll probably say that. But for me, looking at the story first, Pusha T shouldn't have made that reference. He started the whole business with that reference. And what do you expect Steve to say? His suit line, as a matter of fact, earns millions of dollars every year. People are buying his suits. So you can say what you want. You can say they're old or whatever. The millennial demographic is the largest demographic alive in the United States today. They have the number one buying power in the country, in our economy. But for some reason, these old man Steve Harvey suits are selling. And they're not just selling a
few hundred suits a year either. So, okay, so if we're going to get literal about it, his suits are not old man suits because young folks are buying them too, obviously. It's not just old people buying his suits. And if young people are buying them, they're buying them for their grandpa or their granddaddy or their father or their uncle or somebody, the brethren, somebody. Somebody's purchasing these suits. So, you know, to me, that's not a reason to say that he's arrogant to the point where he's distasteful. But yeah, I mean, somebody gonna come for me and my suits and my brand, I'm gonna say something back too. What's wrong with that? Are we out here keeping it 100 and keeping it equal? And everybody that says something in the public eye, we just counseling them too? Or is it just Steve Harvey? So let's just move on. Staff memo. So when Steve Harvey was in his fifth season at his first Steve Harvey talk show, he put out this memo. Now, I got to admit, I was a little thrown by this memo. I have to admit it. It was a little curt. And plus, given the way that he always praised his staff the first four seasons of this show, it kind of struck me funny that he would actually say these words to his staff. So the memo starts out, "Good morning, everyone. Welcome back. I'd like you all to review and adhere to the following notes and rules for season 5 of my talk show. There will be no meetings in my dressing room, no stopping by or popping in, no one. Do not come to my dressing room unless invited. Do not open my dressing room door. If you open my door, expect to be removed. My security team will stop everyone from standing at my door who have the intent to see or speak to me. I want all the ambushing to stop now. That includes TV staff. You must schedule an appointment. I have been taken advantage of by my lenient policy in the past. This ends now. No more. Do not approach me while I'm in the makeup chair unless I ask to speak with you directly. Either knock or use a doorbell. I am seeking more free time for me throughout the day. Do not wait in any hallway to speak to me. I hate being ambushed. Please make an appointment. I promise you I will not entertain you in the hallway. And do not attempt to walk with me. If you're reading this, yes, I mean you. Everyone, do not take offense to the new way of doing business. It is for the good of my personal life and enjoyment. Thank you all, Steve Harvey." That's the memo. Now, if you're looking at this, it's actually written the way he talks, the way he speaks. He speaks that way. When he's telling the story, I can pretty much hear the tone of his voice in this memo. "Don't come around here with that stuff today, man. I'm telling you, if you do this, I'm going to do this. I'm just going to tell you, this is how you're going to get it." That's exactly how this sounds to me. Now, in a professional arena, should he have given this to his staff? No. What he should have done is given this to one of his staff, one of his communication experts or whatever, and had them rewrite it to give the same message in a more professional context. That's what he should have done. So I don't feel good about this memo either. Is it enough to say, oh, he's an arrogant SOB and I don't like him and I'm cutting him off or writing him off and saying that he's horrible? No. But I understand why people were taken aback by this memo. Adding it with the examples I've already given, does it make me feel some type of way about Steve yet? No, I still like Steve Harvey. Steve Harvey from the TV show. Steve Harvey from the Kings of Comedy. Steve Harvey hosting Showtime at the Apollo. Steve Harvey hosting the Dove Awards. I think it was a Dove Awards, one of those awards. Steve Harvey hosting all kinds of TV shows. I love Steve Harvey. So let's keep it moving. Let's keep it moving. Another controversy. All right. So the Flint water crisis was awful. I love parts of the state of Michigan very much. I'm a graduate of Michigan State University, the Spartans, green and white. I love my school. I love Detroit. I love Lansing and East Lansing. And I care deeply about the people in Flint, especially since I met a lot of great people from Flint when I attended school up there. So I watch and pay attention to what goes on in parts of Michigan that I love. And Flint is one of them. What happened in that city was just devastating with the water. It's still not really resolved today. And Steve Harvey had representatives from Flint on his show to focus on this issue. He, from what I understand, he even donated money to help fight and to help the people with clean water. So it's not like he just was just using it as a photo op opportunity to have these people on his show. He really believed in fighting the issue, fighting for the people who were embroiled in the issue. So a guy from Flint called on his radio show after Cleveland lost to the Golden State Warriors in the NBA championship. So just lighthearted conversation back and forth on how Cleveland lost. And he said, well, shoot, Cleveland, you know, horrible place, Cleveland. Everybody who grew up in Cleveland or around Cleveland knows that people would put Cleveland down and say it's the armpit of Ohio and the worst place to live on the planet. Terrible, worst city in all of the Midwest, and all kinds of stuff has been said about Cleveland. So Steve is used to that, right? So dude says, well, shoot, trashiest Cleveland is, y'all didn't deserve to win anything ever, like nothing. And Steve was like, oh, really? Oh, you from Flint? And you going to talk to me about Cleveland? And then he asked him some questions about the water and said, you know, go enjoy your cup of brown water. Well, people did not take kindly to that. They felt like it was too soon. And it was not a good look to have the joke. Okay. And here's my thing. He ended it by saying, enjoy your nice brown glass of water. And the guy laughed because it was tongue in cheek. It was a tongue in cheek joke about had to do with a very funny issue that you can poke fun of. And if you listen to his comedy and D.L. Hughley's comedy, by the way, in a lot of comedians' comedy, they take a real issue and poke fun of it. Dave Chappelle. Oh, my gosh. His whole career has been based on taking serious subjects and poking fun at them. And so you got to remember he's a comedian. So could people feel some kind of way about it? Yes. The mayor of Flint, who was also on his show, she felt like it was disrespectful and hurtful. And even though you didn't intend to do it, you did. The joke, you're making a joke out of the tragedy. No, he wasn't making a joke out of the tragedy. He was shooting down the person who called and trashed on his city to say, ye with glass houses don't need to be throwing stones here because you got some messed up stuff happening in your city too. That's all he was saying. But no, people took it to heart to mean he was poking fun at a serious subject. It was terrible. Well, that's how I see it. I don't see that he was really trying to make fun of Flint or think that it's funny what's happening to Flint. And he defended his joke by saying that. If you are going to hold this against Steve, then you're going to have to hold a whole lot of things accountable against a lot of comedians over the past 90 years of comedy for things that they have said about serious subjects. That's all I'm going to say about that. So, no, that's not getting me to say, oh, he's trash and I can't stand Steve Harvey and I'm not going to support him ever again. So let's move on. So back in 2000, I believe it was 15, somebody announced that he was going to run for president. And this person ended up winning the election in 2016. I'm not going to say his name. We all know it was the previous 45th president of the United States. Okay. But before he became president, he asked for a meeting. For some reason, his camp contacted the Obama camp and said, hey, can you schedule a meeting between us with Steve Harvey? I'm not going to get into the why they did it. I do believe that the whole reason why they went that route to contact Steve and pick Steve is because of his momentum. His star was still up here in the peak. It was on the rise. And I believe that that's the reason why they picked him. Because if you notice, they picked people that were influential in a positive way on the black community to come talk to. Because at the time, Kanye was one that he picked
who was influential on black to black people. Steve Harvey, influential to black people. He asked some other people who declined, and Steve should have declined. He acknowledges this later that, yeah, I should listen to my staff and my wife and not gone. But he was like, look, Obama's my friend. Hey, I'll go talk to him. But it's not like he went to talk to Trump because I'm in his camp. He went to talk to him. Well, I said his name. He went to talk to him as a favor to Obama, really. So he went. Then after he takes the meeting, all of a sudden now he's Uncle Tom. He's a sellout. He's a trailer. He's a snake. He don't care about nothing but money. He this, he that, because he took a meeting. Now, what I will say is after the meeting, I don't think that Steve handled it very well. After the meeting with him, instead of saying, hey, all I'm going to say, we had a good meeting, and he's a good dude or something he said about 45, I wouldn't have said that. If I had been invited to take a meeting with him, I would have gone. I would have gone and had my say and say to him, look, the reason why you're not going to get our vote is these things right here. You either change this or you can't count on the vote. And no, I'm not doing anything to help you. And then after the meeting, I would have told everyone, I would have had a press conference to say what I said to his butt and said, hey, that's what I went and told him. If you get a chance to go meet with him, you should go meet with him and tell him the same thing. But that's not what he did. So because he was not clear and he left too much ambiguity, of course people are going to run to the wrong side. Because remember, we've already had some other incidents with him. This memo with the company and with his staff and so forth and all this other stuff going on, people were already starting to question Steve. So it was not a very smart idea to not go ahead and you know, handle it that way. So I can kind of see where people fell off with him during this crisis. But with the other things that I've mentioned, along with this 40 meeting with 45, I wouldn't write them off. I'd look at them and try to watch and follow. But writing them off totally? Nah. Back to the relationship tip. Not only were people upset about what happened with his prior wife, when he came out with the book, Think Like a Man or something like Talk Like a Woman, Think Like a Man or something like that. That came out in the 90-day rule. The 90-day rule says a woman, when dating a man, should make him wait at least 90 days before she will have sex with him. Now, I was surprised that a lot of women actually had a problem with this. And I see that a lot of men did, because men want the cookie and they did not want to wait 90 days. And they were saying, hey, well, okay, well, she'll make me wait 90 days. I'll just go get it from somewhere else in the meantime and just not tell her. So I'll be able to still date her and get what I want. Well, a lot of women took exception to it too. I'm still not clear as to why, even though I'm reading some of these things, it's just amazing to me. But you're also dealing with a woman here who once made somebody wait 8 months for me. So, you know, it's the 90-day rule. I don't have any problem with it. I don't, talking to somebody that doesn't have like one night stands, I don't meet people and then go sleep with them. That's just never been my way. So I don't understand the need or the controversy about the 90-day rule. But people are saying he's setting himself up to be Dear Abby or a relationship guru, because he wrote this book and he's had two divorces and married for the third time. Well, let me ask you, married people, who would you want to seek marriage advice from? Do you want to seek marriage advice from somebody who says, oh, Lawrence and I have a perfect marriage and, you know, we never argue and things are just so great and wonderful all the time? Is that who you seek the marriage advice from? Or do you want to seek marriage advice from someone who's actually lived it, made mistakes, and now they're out telling people, hey, this and that, don't make the same mistakes I did. You know, for me, I want somebody that's been through the fire.
I don't want somebody that's just, you know, everything's been great and hunky-dory. So, yes, I want you to advise me on marriage. I want somebody that's been down and dirty. I want someone who's been forthright, like Steve, and said, I was a dog. I was a misogynist. I did take advantage of women. I did disregard their feelings and their wants and needs and desires. Look where they got me. Two failed marriages and being labeled a dog, and no women took me seriously. He has been forthright in this. That's part of the reason why he felt he could write the book. That's the reason why he started offering this advice. He hasn't been given relationship advice since he was 20. The man is over 60-some years old now. And he's given the advice based upon his failures. Not because he's setting himself up to be the expert and just flat out unqualified and just ignorant country boy that doesn't know anything. But that's how people are taking it, because they just don't like Steve Harvey now. This is the same Steve Harvey that was beloved back when he had his first Steve Harvey show. Back when he was doing his comedy routines and appearing on comedy shows. Back when he was hosting the Showtime at the Apollo the first times he did it. Back when he was doing all these wonderful appearances on other people's shows as well and in movies. This is the same Steve Harvey, but now you hate him. I just don't get it. I think the final straw then came with the whole Monique controversy. Monique was in a battle with Netflix because she thought she should get more money than she was being offered to do her comedy special. And she was demanding to get paid the same as others, other men and other white women. And I don't have any problem with her demand. I believe that the points that she raised was excellent. But I agreed with Steve in that I felt like she went about it the wrong way, asking people to boycott Netflix at the time. It was the way she did it. But let me tell you what's the real kicker for me. When the controversy first came up that Monique was asking people to boycott Netflix, I saw a lot of black people not coming to her defense, saying, okay, so you had Precious and you got an Academy Award for that. But what have you done since then? You haven't done that much. You this, you that. You can't demand that kind of money that maybe, what was her name? Amy Toller, or Amy Poehler, I forgot the lady's name, or Wanda Sykes could command. I mean, they're legendary comedy. Wanda is not only a legendary comedian herself, but she's a legendary comedy writer, writing jokes for Chris Rock for years. I mean, people didn't know that. And so they were like, well, you can't command that. She was actually being bashed for that when her show ended, the Monique show, which I thought was fantastic. And should never have been ended. I remember she was on the same time Wendy Williams. They kept Wendy Williams and dropped Monique. And I thought that was a travesty. And they also dropped Queen Latifah and kept Wendy Williams. Another travesty. But anyway, that's another show. I digress on that. But people pander. Her own people, black people, saying, girl, please sit down. That Precious was a long time ago. What have you done for me lately? But then, when she let it be known that she was hurt by what Steve Harvey said to her, some of those same people coming to her defense talking about, oh, yeah, Monique. Oh, yeah, that was wrong. He did you wrong. Oh, we hate Steve Harvey now. Really? Is that what we doing? Is this like schoolyard taking sides? Is that what this is? Schoolyard bullying? It's just unnerving to me. And I don't agree with some of the things that Steve said when he finally had her on the show to talk to her. But one of the things he said was, this is the money game. And he's right. I remember my grandparents talking to us when we were kids about the money game. And about how you should behave if you're as a black person, if you were lucky enough to get millions of dollars as a responsible black person to your race, what you should do with it. And how you should navigate. But you got to be very careful. You can either take the Bill Cosby route, or you could take the activist route. You could do one of the two.
How you decide to move will determine the success you get. So what Bill Cosby did, and I'm not talking about the sexual assault part. Let's just leave that out. Pretend like that didn't even happen. Let's just talk about this money thing. There was a controversy way back when between Bill Cosby and another black actor who was an activist. People were mad because Bill Cosby did not come out and speak out against racial discrimination and the civil rights movement. He kept quiet and just kept making movies and shows and collecting money. At the same time, he was donating money to HBCUs and other initiatives in the black community that we all know about. But he didn't go speak out. Kind of like a Michael Jordan thing, right? But this other actor was an activist. He had a few movies. He had a few shows. Had a couple songs. But he had nowhere the success of Bill Cosby. And the reason why is because he got blackballed by white people who controlled Hollywood. And therefore, he wasn't able to get the same amount of money to help our community the way Cosby was able to do. So, who's a sellout? Was Cosby a sellout just because he didn't say anything? Or did he take the path that he felt was the best way to help his community? Fast forward to Monique and Steve Harvey. That's what Steve Harvey was talking about. Now, if you've been following Steve Harvey his whole career, you know he is not a wordsmith. He is not a great speaker. He uses bad grammar. He can't think of the words that he wants to say because his vocabulary is not extensive. But the general idea of what he's talking about, 9 times out of 10, you can understand what he's saying. And what I understand him to be saying to her is, despite the way he put it, he's saying, listen, you've got to be smart and get this money and get it so we can continue helping our people together. That's what he's talking about when he said this is the money game. Now, when she came back and said, well, this is the integrity game, I didn't like that on her part, because what she was implying was that he was selling out his integrity to get that money. And that's not at all what he was doing. And that's not at all what he was telling her to do. He was telling her, yeah, it may have been wrong. Yes, you probably should have gotten paid more money. But guess what you do? You go ahead and get the money they're going to give you this time. But you keep building your following so that the next time you probably get the money you deserve. This is done in sports all the time. This is done in contract negotiations all the time. A large amount of the time, the person who is coming to the table at the disadvantage is the employee. And they only have so much leverage. But when you get an agreement done, and what you do with that agreement this time can dictate what you can negotiate for and get the next time. That's what he's saying. He's not telling her to sell out and just take $10,000 when you should be getting $10 million. I don't know what the numbers were, but that's not what he was telling her to do. And but that's how she took it. That's how she related to the public. And that's how many of you out there took it as well. Why? Probably because of all these examples I just named since 2003, you started putting all these together, and all of a sudden you decided you're going to be Team Monique instead of Team Steve. When really myself, Sharon the Chocolate Writer, I'm on team both of them. I love them both.
I tell you. Yep, I'm team both of them. I'm team Steve and team Monique. I don't agree with some of the things either one of them have said or done in their careers, but I do support both of them. Another thing that Steve said was, quote, the best thing we can do for poor people is not be one of them. And we black out here. We black out here. We can't come out here and do it any kind of way. End quote. People took exception to that. But what he said is very true. We don't like to talk about it. We don't want to talk about it. We don't want to hear it. But it is true. And until my mother always said, while you have your hand in the horse's mouth, you better be careful or you will draw back a nub. She always said that you better be careful what you say and do as long as you have the hand in the horse's mouth. That's all he was saying. Not saying stepping and fetching, not saying cooning, that word that people love to say, not saying to kiss people's behind or none of that. That's not what that means. And for people who take that to mean that, you are deciding to take it to mean that. You want to be contrarian. You want to believe that this man got money and now he's sold out to the man. That's what you want to believe. But that is not at all what he was saying. The two people, the actors that I was talking about earlier, Bill Cosby, and I said the other actor who was also an activist. Well, his name was Harry Belafonte. I loved Harry Belafonte. I thought he was handsome, thought he could act pretty well, he could sing. He was very smart in civic matters as well. Loved him. But he could not help his community in the way that Bill Cosby could because he couldn't earn the money because he was banned. That's the only reason why he wasn't as successful in his field is because he was banned. They wouldn't hire him. They blocked deals for him in Hollywood and so forth. And yes, if he had it to do all over again, he probably would have done it the same way he did it. And that's fine for him. But one thing that I want people to understand is that activism does not have to be done one way. You can help your community in many different ways. I don't have to do it the same way you do. You don't have to do it the same way I do. Steve Harvey doesn't have to do it the same way Bill Cosby does it or Harry Belafonte does it. He can do it his way. It's all valuable. It's all needed. And as long as we get the help in our community and it betters our community overall, how can you pan it? As long as you maintain your self-respect and you maintain commitment to your community and you're not selling the community out to someone who will harm us in the process, it's all gravy to me. So, you know, saying that that means sell out or kiss behind, not at all. Not at all what that means. So you've got all these things together and all of these spell negativity about Steve Harvey. I'm left looking at them the way that I've already told you I look at them, as some of them are hiccups, but nothing that's going to make me judge his character to be something very sinister and harmful to the black community. I don't see him that way. Therefore, when I found out that he was hosting the Verses, I just cannot understand the hate that he's receiving. This man has made millions of dollars. He puts money into his community, into our community, the black community, all over the country. He doesn't stick to one geographic location. He helps all over. I especially like what he's done in helping young black boys, a demographic of people who really needs it, especially in this time of trauma that we're experiencing out here in these streets. So I don't have a problem with Steve Harvey. I don't have a problem with him flashing his cigars and the yacht and the trips and the jewels and the furs for Marjorie and the cars and the house. And, you know, I've got money. I don't have any problem with him saying that. Doesn't change the fact that he's given a lot of this money away to help people less fortunate than he is, and also sending students to college and also giving back to his community where he grew up. I don't have any problem with it. Now, other things that I have seen people say and talk about negatively with Steve Harvey is how he speaks. Well, one of the things Steve has never done is he never tried to be something he's not. Despite his bad grammar and his country sound, Steve Harvey is who he is. He is authentic. I appreciate that authenticity. Now, if his grammar was so bad, so bad that he should get help with it, that's a different story. Case in point, Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson, former NBA great, former Michigan State great, terrible grammar, did not speak well. We all know the story. He had a talk show, didn't last long. Part of the reason is because of the way he speaks. If you play footage of Magic Johnson back then and now, it's like night and day. You can hear a difference in his word usage, intonation of words, everything. Why? Because he went and got help for it. His was so bad, he needed help. Steve Harvey, not only is he a businessman, but he's in entertainment. And he started out a comedian. His is not so bad that he needs help, in my opinion. Some people may think otherwise. But to me, it's part of the reason why I like him. It's refreshing that he's able to be authentic, use bad grammar and everything, and he is still wanted to host things. He's still wanted. He's hosting right now the one of the most popular game shows next to The Price is Right, which is Family Feud, who's had several different hosts before him, but he's the one that's sticking around the longest besides the original host, Richard Dawson. So, I mean, people love Steve Harvey. I don't understand it. Yes, bad grammar is one thing and country sounding is another thing. But, you know, as I told someone today, he actually sounds like he's a good old Southern boy and not raised in Cleveland, Ohio. I'm from Ohio. When I first heard Steve Harvey speak, I thought he was from Mississippi, Alabama, somewhere like that, Georgia, because that's how he sounds. He sounds more like these people here where I live now in North Carolina than he does in Ohio. Yet you got all these North Carolina people talking about that country Bama sound. He sounds like y'all. So I don't, who are you to talk about the way he sounds? But anyhow, that doesn't throw me off. I'm not thrown off by that. And then this whole shucking and jiving, kissing up to the white people, I don't see that as well. It was the same thing said about Oprah Winfrey that I thought was unfair when they got money and they decided to, you know, engage with white people. All of a sudden they're sucking up. It's not fair and it's not true. So all of this has been said. It hasn't changed my mind. I think it's very unfair for people to pan this man. But everybody's entitled to their opinion. I just was trying to get some understanding. I don't have any. There's nothing that I have found that would make me sit up and say, you know what, I just can't stand him anymore. I still love him as much as I did when I first started watching him back when he was just a comedian on Def Jam. Because that was the first time I ever saw him. And he was funny to me then. He's still funny. I got people who say he's not. Okay. Well, I don't think that Cat Williams is funny. So y'all can have Cat. I'll take Steve Harvey. But I like Steve Harvey. That's just the bottom line on that. So back to the verses. People watched the verses with Steve Harvey as the host. And while some found him to be like a distraction or that they thought that he was only there trying to take their shine, I found the way that he hosted to be exactly what was needed for these two legendary groups. He's a fan, and he truly and authentically felt honored to be there. And you could see he was a fan with the way he was looking at him. He was just glad to be in the room. And I kid you not, I could see him actually crying before or after that show saying, y'all are just so great. How did this country boy from Cleveland, Ohio end up here in this space? I just can't believe it. God is good. I bet you he's those words or something similar came out of his mouth, because that's how appreciative he seemed to me. He was like, in the beginning, he was like, people question why Steve Harvey? Because why? Why not? This is me. Their music is my life. He could relate. He could pinpoint phases of his life with the music that came out with these two groups. I could too. Some of the stories that he told on what the music meant to him, that wasn't taking shine or attention away from the artist. That was adding context. That's what a host of this type of show is supposed to do. They're supposed to add some. Otherwise, only thing you needed was the two bands and D-Nice and no host at all. I've seen verses like that. And it was kind of difficult to get people to talk and have banter back and forth without a host. And I thought that this actually worked better. He made transitions. He talked about the stories. He asked them questions to get the artists to tell about the stories, like who wrote this song. And for people to, for them to tell who wrote particular songs, I was sitting there like, wow, wow. I didn't know they wrote that. Wow, that's cool. I didn't know that they wrote that for somebody else. All of this. And the stories, I thought, just illustrated the songs for people. I think it was especially important to younger people who did not grow up on their music, so they can understand why their mama or their dad or their auntie was getting so excited when this verses was announced, because they're not familiar. They have no idea how much Earth, Wind, and Fire meant, how he walked 4 miles to the record store to pick up that album, The Way of the World, for the first time, and walked all the way back to the dorm and took it and played it with this girl in the dorm room. They have no idea about that. And they have no idea how I remember growing up listening to Mighty Mighty by Earth, Wind, and Fire in the car as we rode in the car to my grandmother's house, but from Dayton, Ohio to Virginia and back. And we played Mighty Mighty over and over. I know every word to that song to this day, my sister and I. And mom was so tired of that song. Mom and dad were so tired of that song. They didn't want to hear Mighty Mighty. And I mean, that's a running joke in our family. Up until the day both of my parents passed away, that was still a running joke in our family. Mighty Mighty by Earth, Wind, and Fire. Because that's how Sheila introduced it on the tape when we recorded it on the cassette tape. I mean, that's a memory. I'm nostalgic about things like that. If you're not, that's you. But for me, my Earth, Wind, and Fire and the Isley Brothers, you can't get too much better than that, baby. And I could see him being there like, oh my gosh, let me host, man. Let me host. Let me just be in the room. Because he's a fan. Not because he's an arrogant SOB and wants it to be about him. But because he wanted to be, he's honored to even be in the room with them. He said several times that he wanted to be them his whole life. That's like a dream come true to be there. Now, some people offered up the name Donnie Simpson as if he would have been a great choice. I think Donnie would have been an excellent choice as a host, but you would have got a totally different show, which you would have gotten more of. You would have gotten more interview style questions. And just a lot of him saying, "Whoa, I love that song," but I'm not sure if you would have gotten as many illustrative stories as Steve gave you, because it were personal to him. I'm not sure. I'm not sure about Donnie's experience. I know about Steve's experience with both of these groups, and because he's mentioned it throughout his comedy, his entire career. I don't know. He would have been great too. But I think Steve did an excellent job. People were thrown off, like when there was a time, I don't know if you guys did not watch it, but Mr. Ronald Isley showed up with a chinchilla fur on, chinchilla coat, and a Dolce & Gabbana suit. I mean, tailored to fit him perfectly with a walking stick. Oh my gosh, he just looked so good. Man is 80 years old just about, and it's like, wow, he's still looking good and still can get around there.
But there was at one time they were playing a song, and Steve put on the coat in the background and was standing behind him, kind of dancing a little bit in the background while they were performing up front. People said he was clowning in the back, trying to make it about him. Let them have their moment. Really? See, it's just a glass is half empty and half full type of thing with me here. I didn't take it that way. But if you don't like Steve Harvey, that's exactly what you would have thought. The cameramen did an excellent job of making sure that it remained about the music. If they flashed to Steve, it was only for a minute, but they flashed right back on the artist themselves. That's the way they were supposed to do it. They've done these verses now several times. They know what they were doing, and they did it right. It was handled properly. I don't understand what in the world people are talking about here. So I have to give a shout out to my homegirl, my friend Leslie Sloan Ansley, because of her, she's the reason why I ended up even watching the replay of the video of the verses. I did not watch it while it was going on. And the reason why is because I didn't want to be looking at the comments flashing on the screen or any of that. I just wanted to enjoy the music. So I wasn't going to actually watch it. I was just going to play it and listen to it. But because of some of the comments that I had seen from her today, I decided to go ahead and watch the video. And I am so thankful that I did watch the video replay so I could actually see this, to see these two legendary groups, to learn just how close friends they really are behind the scenes, how they're aware of each other's music. In fact, Earth, Wind, and Fire, Philip Bailey, Verdine White, and I forgot the other guy in the middle, they actually stood up and sung backup a few times for Ronald Isley on the Isley Brothers song. And I mean, they sounded good. They were hitting the right notes. You could hear it. It was excellent. So much love between them. So much love from Steve for them. So much love from all of them to D Nice. It was just a wonderful experience, and I enjoyed it. I really feel that the hatred for Steve Harvey is unfounded. Nothing I can do to change it. It's not, you know, it's not taking money out of my pocket. It's not affecting my life personally, but it was something that was just bothering me today, so I thought I'd speak on it. Let me know what you think. Let me know how you feel about it. I could be all wrong in your opinion. Maybe so, but I don't find him to be a super arrogant, misogynistic blowhard that knows nothing and trying to set himself up as an expert of something he knows nothing about. I don't find that. I don't find him to be a sellout, selling black people out for money so that he can make more money at our expense. I don't find that. And I mean, I took time to really look at this stuff to find the information, and no, I don't find that at all. So let me know what you think. This is the last thing I'm going to end with. I'm going to end with what the word of the day is. I made a post on my Facebook page today that the word of the day is the word judgmental. Judgmental means having or displaying an excessively critical point of view. Excessively critical point of view. And I believe that many of you are really being judgmental, super judgmental when it comes to Steve Harvey. And I believe it's unfair. But you're entitled. It's a free country, free thinking world. You think what you want. We can both look at the same thing and think two different things about the same incident. So that's okay. I'm not saying I'm right and you're wrong. But what I am saying is this is what chocolate feels. And I'm always going to say what I feel and what I mean. And let the chips fall where they may. Chips fall where they may. So I don't think I'll be watching any more verses. I think I'll go back to really not trying to watch verses anymore, because like I said, I just don't like the negativity that comes along with it afterwards. But hey, this one was well worth it. And with that, I think I'll be putting on some Earth, Wind, and Fire and some Isley Brothers this afternoon as I prepare for my day tomorrow. And we'll call it a night. All right? All right. So once again, thank you so much for joining me. I've had a blast. This is Sharon Mullen, the chocolate writer. Thank you for joining me for episode 2. We're going to call this one Steve Harvey is My Uncle. So you can look for me on Spotify. You can look for me on Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts. And anywhere else you can listen to your podcast, you'll probably find me. So you can follow me. You can find me under Did You Hear What Chocolate Said? With a question mark at the end. If you want to follow the Chocolate Writer, you can follow me on all platforms under Chocolate Writer. And my website is www, if people still say that, .thechocolatewriter.com. You know, I wish you all nothing but love, peace, and hair grease. Take care. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the second episode of Did You Hear What Chocolate Said? I am your host, Sharon Mullen, the Chocolate Writer. Welcome, welcome, welcome. So glad to have you with me today. As we listen to the musical rendition of Let's Groove Tonight by the Elements Earth, Wind, and Fire, just want to say I do not own the rights to this music. It's just purely for intro purposes, not to profit or anything. Just want to talk a little bit today about the recent verses with Earth, Wind, and Fire and the great Isley Brothers. DJed with DJ D-Nice, the incredible, amazing D-Nice, and hosted by none other than Steve Harvey. I don't know, I just have some trepidation about the things I'm seeing out here. And it all has to do with Steve. It's not even about the music. That's where the focus should have remained. But nope, it was the music. So let's talk about it today. Let's talk about it. So the Verses, if you don't know, is a musical contest of sorts, where you have two artists, and they pick 20 songs for each artist, and it's like you play one song against the other one at a time, and then I guess we as an artist is supposed to pick between those two songs in a battle which song wins. What I learned about watching Verses is that it's not about how they perform the song now on the Verses show, it's just about the song itself. For instance, if they did a Verses with, let's say, Cameo versus Confunction, and you had Candy versus Change Me by Confunction, and which song would win? Well, for those of you who are too young to know who Confunction and Cameo are, I'm sorry, but this is the quickest and easiest example I could think of. So those of you who do know those songs, you can hit me up in the comments or send me a message and tell me which song you would have win that Verses. But that's how the Verses is set up. So when the announcement came out that it was going to be an Earth, Wind, and Fire versus the Isley Brothers Verses,
everybody was really excited because you're talking two legendary bands.
Earth, Wind, and Fire, the elements of the universe. You got Maurice White and Philip Bailey and Verdine White on that bass and all that animation that he does when you see a live show. I mean, hundreds of songs. You couldn't even really count them all. It's just amazing. Then you've got the legendary Isley Brothers that go way back to the 50s and 60s. And I mean, you can't ask for two bands with a better catalog of music to compare. And they're both near and dear to my heart. I have to say in full disclosure that Earth, Wind, and Fire, though, is my favorite band or group of all time. Earth, Wind, and Fire, yes. But anyway, by the time that this was announced, truly, I have to be honest and say, I had decided that I wasn't going to even watch. Even though I love these bands, the idea of Versus for me at this point was, it had played out. I'll just put it like that. It had played out to me. I think what started it was when they did a Versus with Patti LaBelle and Gladys Knight. And I believe the way that the public treated Patti after the verse, well, actually the way that they treated Gladys before the Versus, they were panning Gladys saying, how in the world could you even put Gladys up against Patti LaBelle? She's going to blow her away and all this stuff. And I'm thinking, this is the legendary Gladys Knight, the only artist that, according to some, the only artist that they've known to be on pitch every time they hear her sing live or anyplace else, she's always on pitch. This is Gladys Knight from Gladys Knight and the Pips that goes back all the way to the, I think, 60s or 50s as well. And the woman can blow and has range and everything. And she's classic. She's no joke. But then after the Verses, then they were Pan and Patti. I'm just like, what? You're talking about two legendary people here. Who cares who wins? Should they really be winning? Is it really about the music? It was about the music for me. And so after that, I just decided I didn't really like the format. I didn't like the things that people were saying about the artists. It just no longer became about the music, it seemed, and more about a battle and who's on what team and whose team won and all that. It kind of cheapened it for me. So I lost interest and I got over it. So my plan was not to even watch this Versus, as much as I do love the both of the bands. But what I started seeing, even before it took place yesterday, is a whole lot of hatred for the host. It wasn't even about the music. It's Steve Harvey. Steve Harvey hosting? Oh, I'm not watching. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh. You mean to tell me you love Earth, Wind, and Fire and the Isley Brothers as much as I do, but because he's hosting, you're gonna go ahead and risk missing it just because you can't stand him? And then I began to question, why do you hate Steve Harvey so much? It's like have I been asleep for the past 10 years? What's going on that so many black people that I hear hate Steve Harvey? I just didn't understand it. So I just started looking up articles, trying to figure out what's going on. So I came up with a list of reasons that I found that people hate Steve Harvey. Okay. So what I'm finding is, one, all the way back to 2003. I never even heard this controversy, so this was new to me. But supposedly, back in 2003, when they were filming the movie Ocean's 11, supposedly Steve Harvey's agent contacted the movie producers and asked them if they would consider Steve Harvey for the role that Bernie Mac ended up playing in that movie.
Yes, Steve Harvey's agent supposedly called asking them to consider Steve Harvey rather than Bernie Mac for the movie role in 2003. And I'm thinking to myself, what's wrong? Why are you hating on Steve for this? This is the agent that did this. If this is true, it would have been the agent that did it. It was the agent's call to make, and the agent was just trying to do what's best for his client. How can you get mad at Steve Harvey for that? When the story came out, Steve denied it. Steve was like, no, my agent didn't do that. That's not what happened at all. Bernie Mac came out and said, what you want me to say? I don't, whatever. But the two other kings of comedy came later, Cedric and DL, said that this particular controversy did cause beef between Steve and Bernie Mac. Causing beef doesn't mean it was true. It could have been that Bernie Mac believed it to be true, and Steve could have been saying all along, look, Mac, I didn't do that. It's not true. I didn't do it. My agent didn't do it. Whoever, nobody was trying to sell you out for money. But we will never know, because Bernie Mac now has passed away, of course. Rest in peace, Bernie Mac. And I guess if you like Steve, you believe him. And if you don't, then you don't believe him. I don't know. But to me, that's not a good reason to just hate the man after everything that this man has done in his life and career. And on behalf of black people, you going to cast him aside for that? Okay, well, let's keep going. So, Steve Harvey has been married 3 times. This is his 3rd marriage. The first 2 didn't work out. He finally came public about those 2 prior marriages later on, but they didn't end well. And one of his prior wives, Mary Lee Harvey, came out and said, you know, some disparageable things about Steve, like that he turned his son against her, that he kicked her out of the house and manipulated the courts and so forth. When they went to court, he came out and said, you know, my business, my empire, whatever, I built it by myself, and she was hurt, and blah, blah, blah. Well, it was a bad breakup. Anytime you have a couple that's embroiled in a bad breakup, you're going to get stories from both sides. You get his side, you get her side, and somewhere in the middle falls the truth. So since neither one of us participated in their marriage, who are we to know who's telling the truth here? How are we supposed to know this? So you can either believe her and say he was a bum, or you can believe him and say that wasn't true. She was just disgruntled. Both could be true. And I just find it hard to believe that people would also hold that against Steve Harvey now in 2021, but they could be. All right, well, let's move on to something else. His arrogance. Supposedly, Steve Harvey is seen as being so arrogant. Okay. I know a lot of people, a lot of stars, TV stars, movie stars, sports stars, media stars who are arrogant. And their arrogance shows through. I still like them for what they do, but they're just arrogant people. But now with Steve Harvey, it's like arrogance is something new that he created, that you got to hold it against Steve for being arrogant. Everybody over there can be arrogant, but Steve can't be arrogant. And one of the examples I found about his arrogance was something that was said between him and Pusha T. Yes, Pusha T. Pusha T, the rap artist and producer and, rapper, he made a comment. You know, he had beef with Drake, the other rapper and entertainer and producer. And in one of his comments, either a rap lyric or a comment, he said, stop dragging your father around, your daddy around, wearing those Steve Harvey suits, Steve Harvey suits. So that's a diss. That's a sign of disrespect there when you say dragging your daddy around in them Steve Harvey suits. What you're saying is old man suits. And for a young guy like Pusha T and Drake, and you're talking to an audience of primary younger people, that is a put down. That is a negative statement. Pusha T made a negative statement in reference to Steve Harvey about Pusha T and his dad. That's how it started. But Steve Harvey comes back and says, who the F is Pusha T? Who's his broke ass? See, he probably literally did not know who Pusha T is. So, of course, he's going to say broke because he don't know who he is. Never heard of him. Didn't know. So, you call him a broke ass. Now, I don't know about you, but where I'm from, when you call somebody broke ass, it's not really in reference to their financial status. Broke ass just means you're a bum, whatever that means. It doesn't mean that you're literally broke and you don't have money. So the response to that I've seen in a couple of research items that I saw that brought up this Pusha T issue is, oh, well, he's really worth about $10, $15 million and he's this and he's successful and blah, blah, blah. So he's not broke. And so Steve called him broke and he's not broke. That's kind of arrogant. No, that's not resting well with me. If you don't like Steve Harvey already, then yes, you'll probably say that. But for me, looking at the story first, Pusha T shouldn't have made that reference. He started the whole business with that reference. And what do you expect Steve to say? His suit line, as a matter of fact, earns millions of dollars every year. People are buying his suits. So you can say what you want. You can say they're old or whatever. The millennial demographic is the largest demographic alive in the United States today. They have the number one buying power in the country, in our economy. But for some reason, these old man Steve Harvey suits are selling. And they're not just selling a few hundred suits a year either. So, okay, so if we're going to get literal about it, his suits are not old man suits because young folks are buying them too, obviously. It's not just old people buying his suits. And if young people are buying them, they're buying them for their grandpa or their granddaddy or their father or their uncle or somebody, the brethren, somebody. Somebody's purchasing these suits. So, you know, to me, that's not a reason to say that he's arrogant to the point where he's distasteful. But yeah, I mean, somebody gonna come for me and my suits and my brand, I'm gonna say something back too. What's wrong with that? Are we out here keeping it 100 and keeping it equal? And everybody that says something in the public eye, we just counseling them too? Or is it just Steve Harvey? So let's just move on. Staff memo. So when Steve Harvey was in his fifth season at his first Steve Harvey talk show, he put out this memo. Now, I gotta admit, I was a little thrown by this memo. I have to admit it. It was a little curt. And plus, given the way that he always praised his staff the first four seasons of this show, it kind of struck me funny that he would actually say these words to his staff. So the memo starts out, "Good morning, everyone. Welcome back. I'd like you all to review and adhere to the following notes and rules for season 5 of my talk show. There will be no meetings in my dressing room, no stopping by or popping in, no one. Do not come to my dressing room unless invited. Do not open my dressing room door. If you open my door, expect to be removed. My security team will stop everyone from standing at my door who have the intent to see or speak to me. I want all the ambushing to stop now. That includes TV staff. You must schedule an appointment. I have been taken advantage of by my lenient policy in the past. This ends now, no more. Do not approach me while I'm in the makeup chair unless I ask to speak with you directly. Either knock or use a doorbell. I am seeking more free time for me throughout the day. Do not wait in any hallway to speak to me. I hate being ambushed. Please make an appointment. I promise you I will not entertain you in the hallway. And do not attempt to walk with me. If you're reading this, yes, I mean you. Everyone, do not take offense to the new way of doing business. It is for the good of my personal life and enjoyment. Thank you all, Steve Harvey." That's the memo. Now, if you're looking at this, it's actually written the way he talks, the way he speaks. He speaks that way. When he's telling the story, I can pretty much hear the tone of his voice in this memo. Don't come around here with that stuff today, man. I'm telling you, if you do this, I'm going to do this. I'm just going to tell you, this is how you're going to get it. That's exactly how this sounds to me. Now, in a professional arena, should he have given this to his staff? No. What he should have done is given this to one of his staff, one of his communication experts or whatever, and had them rewrite it to give the same message in a more professional context. That's what he should have done. So I don't feel good about this memo either. Is it enough to say, oh, he's an arrogant SOB and I don't like him and I'm cutting him off or writing him off and saying that he's horrible? No. But I understand why people were taken aback by this memo. Adding it with the examples I've already given, does it make me feel some type of way about Steve yet? No. I still like Steve Harvey. Steve Harvey from the TV show. Steve Harvey from the Kings of Comedy. Steve Harvey hosting Showtime at the Apollo. Steve Harvey hosting the Dove Awards. I think it was a Dove Awards, one of those awards. Steve Harvey hosting all kinds of TV shows. I love Steve Harvey. So let's keep it moving. Let's keep it moving. Another controversy. All right. So the Flint water crisis was awful. I love parts of the state of Michigan very much. I'm a graduate of Michigan State University, the Spartans, green and white. I love my school. I love Detroit. I love Lansing and East Lansing. And I care deeply about the people in Flint, especially since I met a lot of great people from Flint when I attended school up there. So I watch and pay attention to what goes on in parts of Michigan that I love. And Flint is one of them. What happened in that city was just devastating with the water. It's still not really resolved today. And Steve Harvey had representatives from Flint on his show to focus on this issue. He, from what I understand, he even donated money to help fight and to help the people with clean water. So it's not like he just was just using it as a photo op opportunity to have these people on his show. He really believed in fighting the issue, fighting for the people who were embroiled in the issue. So a guy from Flint called on his radio show after Cleveland lost to the Golden State Warriors in the NBA championship. So just lighthearted conversation back and forth on how Cleveland lost. And he said, well, shoot, Cleveland, you know, horrible place, Cleveland. Everybody who grew up in Cleveland or around Cleveland knows that people would put Cleveland down and say it's the armpit of Ohio and the worst place to live on the planet. Terrible, worst city in all of the Midwest, and all kinds of stuff has been said about Cleveland. So Steve is used to that, right? So dude says, well, shoot, trashiest Cleveland is, y'all didn't deserve to win anything ever, like nothing. And Steve was like, oh, really? Oh, you from Flint? And you gonna talk to me about Cleveland? And then he asked him some questions about the water and said, you know, go enjoy your cup of brown water. Well, people did not take kindly to that. They felt like it was too soon and it was not a good look to have the joke. Okay. And here's my thing. He ended it by saying, enjoy your nice brown glass of water. And the guy laughed. Because it was tongue in cheek. It was a tongue in cheek joke about had to do with a very funny issue that you can poke fun of. And if you listen to his comedy and D.L. Hughley's comedy, by the way, in a lot of comedians' comedy, they take a real issue and poke fun of it. Dave Chappelle, oh my gosh, his whole career has been based on taking serious subjects and poking fun at them. And so you got to remember he's a comedian. So could people feel some kind of way about it? Yes, the mayor of Flint, who was also on his show, she felt like it was disrespectful and hurtful. And even though you didn't intend to do it, you did. The joke, you're making a joke out of the tragedy. No, he wasn't making a joke out of the tragedy. He was shooting down the person who called and trashed on his city to say, ye with glass houses don't need to be throwing stones here because you got some messed up stuff happening in your city too. That's all he was saying. But no, people took it to heart to mean he was poking fun at a serious subject. It was terrible. Well, that's how I see it. I don't see that he was really trying to make fun of Flint or think that it's funny what's happening to Flint. And he defended his joke by saying that. If you are going to hold this against Steve, then you're going to have to hold a whole lot of things accountable against a lot of comedians over the past 90 years of comedy for things that they have said about serious subjects. That's all I'm going to say about that. So, no, that's not getting me to say, oh, he's trash and I can't stand Steve Harvey and I'm not going to support him ever again. So let's move on. So back in 2000, I believe it was 15, somebody announced that he was going to run for president. And this person ended up winning the election in 2016. I'm not going to say his name. We all know it was the previous 45th president of the United States. Okay. But before he became president, he asked for a meeting. For some reason, his camp contacted the Obama camp and said, hey, can you schedule a meeting between us with Steve Harvey? I'm not going to get into the why they did it. I do believe that the whole reason why they went that route to contact Steve and pick Steve is because of his momentum. His star was still up here in the peak. It was on the rise. And I believe that that's the reason why they picked him. Because if you notice, they picked people that were influential in a positive way on the black community to come talk to. Because at the time, Kanye was one that he picked who was influential on black people. Steve Harvey, influential to black people. He asked some other people who declined, and Steve should have declined. He acknowledges this later that, yeah, I should listen to my staff and my wife and not gone. But he was like, look, Obama's my friend. Hey, I'll go talk to him. But it's not like he went to talk to Trump because I'm in his camp. He went to talk to him. Well, I said his name. He went to talk to him as a favor to Obama, really. So he went. Then after he takes the meeting, all of a sudden now he's Uncle Tom. He's a sellout. He's a trailer. He's a snake. He don't care about nothing but money. He this, he that, because he took a meeting. Now, what I will say is after the meeting, I don't think that Steve handled it very well. After the meeting with him, instead of saying, hey, all I'm going to say, we had a good meeting. And he's a good dude or something he said about 45. I wouldn't have said that. If I had been invited to take a meeting with him, I would have gone. I would have gone and had my say and say to him, look, the reason why you're not going to get our vote is these things right here. You either change this or you can't count on the vote. And no, I'm not doing anything to help you. And then after the meeting, I would have told everyone, I would have had a press conference to say what I said to his butt and said, hey, that's what I went and told him. If you get a chance to go meet with him, you should go meet with him and tell him the same thing. But that's not what he did. So because he was not clear and he left too much ambiguity, of course, people are going to run to the wrong side. Because remember, we've already had some other incidents with him. This memo with the company and with his staff and so forth and all this other stuff going on. People were already starting to question Steve. So it was not a very smart idea to not go ahead and you know, handle it that way. So I can kind of see where people fell off with him during this crisis. But with the other things that I've mentioned, along with this meeting with 45, I wouldn't write them off. I look at them and try to watch and follow, but writing them off totally? Nah. Back to the relationship tip. Not only were people upset about what happened with his prior wife, when he came out with the book, Think Like a Man or something like Talk Like a Woman, Think Like a Man or something like that,
that came out in the 90-day rule. The 90-day rule says a woman, when dating a man, should make him wait at least 90 days before she will have sex with him. Now, I was surprised that a lot of women actually had a problem with this. And I see that a lot of men did, because men want the cookie and they did not want to wait 90 days. And they were saying, hey, well, okay, well, she'll make me wait 90 days. I'll just go get it from somewhere else in the meantime and just not tell her. So I'll be able to still date her and get what I want. Well, a lot of women took exception to it too. I'm still not clear as to why, even though I'm reading some of these things. It's just amazing to me. But you're also dealing with a woman here who once made somebody wait 8 months for me. So, you know, it's the 90-day rule. I don't have any problem with it. I don't, talking to somebody that doesn't have like one night stands, I don't meet people and then go sleep with them. That's just never been my way. So I don't understand the need or the controversy about the 90-day rule. But people are saying he's setting himself up to be Dear Abby or a relationship guru because he wrote this book and he's had two divorces and married for the third time. Well, let me ask you, married people, who would you want to seek marriage advice from? You want to seek marriage advice from somebody who says, oh, Lawrence and I have a perfect marriage and, you know, we never argue and things are just so great and wonderful all the time. Is that who you seek the marriage advice from? Or do you want to seek marriage advice from someone who's actually lived it, made mistakes, and now they're out telling people, hey, this and that, don't make the same mistakes I did. You know, for me, I want somebody that's been through the fire. I don't want somebody that's just, you know, everything's been great and hunky-dory. So, yes, I want you to advise me on marriage. I want somebody that's been down and dirty. I want someone who's been forthright like Steve and said, I was a dog. I was a misogynist. I did take advantage of women. I did disregard their feelings and their wants and needs and desires. Look where they got me. Two failed marriages and being labeled a dog and no women took me seriously. He has been forthright in this. That's part of the reason why he felt he could write the book. That's the reason why he started offering this advice. He hasn't been given relationship advice since he was 20. The man is over 60 some years old now. And he's given the advice based upon his failures. Not because he's setting himself up to be the expert and just flat out unqualified and just ignorant country boy that doesn't know anything. But that's how people are taking it because they just don't like Steve Harvey now. This is the same Steve Harvey that was beloved back when he had his first Steve Harvey show. Back when he was doing his comedy routines and appearing on comedy shows. Back when he was hosting the Showtime at the Apollo the first times he did it. Back when he was doing all these wonderful appearances on other people's shows as well and in movies. This is the same Steve Harvey, but now you hate him. I just don't get it. I think the final straw then came with the whole Monique controversy. Monique was in a battle with Netflix because she thought she should get more money than she was being offered to do her comedy special. And she was demanding to get paid the same as others, other men and other white women. And I don't have any problem with her demand. I believe that the points that she raised was excellent. But I agreed with Steve in that I felt like she went about it the wrong way, asking people to boycott Netflix at the time. It was the way she did it. But let me tell you what's the real kicker for me. When the controversy first came up that Monique was asking people to boycott Netflix, I saw a lot of black people not coming to her defense, saying, okay, so you had Precious and you got an Academy Award for that. But what have you done since then? You haven't done that much. You this, you that. You can't demand that kind of money that maybe, what was her name? Amy Toller, or Amy Poehler, I forgot the lady's name, or Wanda Sykes could command. I mean, they're legendary comedy. Wanda is not only a legendary comedian herself, but she's a legendary comedy writer.
writing jokes for Chris Rock for years. I mean, people didn't know that. And so they were like, well, you can't command that. She was actually being bashed for that when her show ended, the Monique show, which I thought was fantastic and should never have been ended. I remember she was on the same time Wendy Williams. They kept Wendy Williams and dropped Monique. And I thought that was a travesty. And they also dropped Queen Latifah and kept Wendy Williams. Another travesty. But anyway, that's another show. I digress on that. But people pander. Her own people, black people, saying, girl, please sit down. That Precious was a long time ago. What have you done for me lately? But then, when she let it be known that she was hurt by what Steve Harvey said to her, some of those same people coming to her defense, talking about, oh, yeah, Monique. Oh, yeah, that was wrong. He did you wrong. Oh, we hate Steve Harvey now. Really? Is that what we're doing? Is this like schoolyard taking sides? Is that what this is? Schoolyard bullying? It's just unnerving to me. And I don't agree with some of the things that Steve said when he finally had her on the show to talk to her. But one of the things he said was, this is the money game. And he's right. I remember my grandparents talking to us when we were kids about the money game and about how you should behave if you're as a black person when you if you were lucky enough to get millions of dollars as a responsible black person to your race, what you should do with it and how you should navigate. But you got to be very careful. You can either take the Bill Cosby route or you could take the activist route. You can do one of the two. How you decide to move will determine the success you get. So what Bill Cosby did, and I'm not talking about the sexual assault part. Let's just leave that out. Pretend like that didn't even happen. Let's just talk about this money thing. There was a controversy way back when between Bill Cosby and another black actor who was an activist. People were mad because Bill Cosby did not come out and speak out against racial discrimination and the civil rights movement. He kept quiet and just kept making movies and shows and collecting money. At the same time, he was donating money to HBCUs and other initiatives in the black community that we all know about. But he didn't go speak out. Kind of like a Michael Jordan thing, right? But this other actor was an activist. He had a few movies. He had a few shows, had a couple songs. But he had nowhere the success of Bill Cosby. And the reason why is because he got blackballed by white people who controlled Hollywood. And therefore, he wasn't able to get the same amount of money to help our community the way Cosby was able to do. So, who's a sellout? Was Cosby a sellout just because he didn't say anything? Or did he take the path that he felt was the best way to help his community? Fast forward to Monique and Steve Harvey. That's what Steve Harvey was talking about. Now, if you've been following Steve Harvey his whole career, you know he is not a wordsmith. He is not a great speaker. He uses bad grammar. He can't think of the words that he wants to say because his vocabulary is not extensive. But the general idea of what he's talking about, 9 times out of 10, you can understand what he's saying. And what I understand him to be saying to her is, despite the way he put it, he's saying, listen, you've got to be smart and get this money and get it so we can continue helping our people together. That's what he's talking about when he said this is the money game. Now, when she came back and said, well, this is the integrity game, I didn't like that on her part because what she was implying was that he was selling out his integrity to get that money. And that's not at all what he was doing. And that's not at all what he was telling her to do. He was telling her, yeah, it may have been wrong. Yes, you probably should have gotten paid more money. But guess what you do? You go ahead and get the money they're going to give you this time. But you keep building your following so that the next time
you probably get the money you deserve. This is done in sports all the time. This is done in contract negotiations all the time. A large amount of the time, the person who is coming to the table at the disadvantage is the employee. And they only have so much leverage. But when you get an agreement done, and what you do with that agreement this time can dictate what you can negotiate for and get the next time. That's what he's saying. He's not telling her to sell out and just take $10,000 when you should be getting $10 million. I don't know what the numbers were, but that's not what he was telling her to do. And but that's how she took it. That's how she related to the public. And that's how many of you out there took it as well. Why? Probably because of all these examples I just named since 2003. You started putting all these together and all of a sudden you decided you're going to be Team Monique instead of Team Steve. When really, myself, Sharon the Chocolate Writer, I'm on team both of them. I love them both.